Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange Ask the Experts session. Today's topic is data power topics on networking, MQ series, ODBC, and other technologies. My name is David Long, and this session will give you the opportunity to speak to our panel of experts on a variety of subjects related to today's topic. The session is scheduled to be an hour in length, but might extend to an hour and a half for the presentation and the question and answer period. If you have not yet joined the web conference, please do so now. The web conference address is available on the WebSphere Technical Exchange website. Moving on to slide two. In today's session, we will start off by introducing our panel of experts to you. We will then move on to give you a brief introduction to data power topics on networking, MQ series, ODBC, and other technologies. Next, our panel of experts will answer questions that were pre-submitted to us through email. Then we will open the lines for a live question and answer period. Finally, the session will end with a summary of today's session. Moving on to slide number three. At this time, I would like our panel of experts to introduce themselves for today's call. Carol Miller is a Data Power L2 software engineer. Please go ahead, Carol.
Hi. Thank you, David. I have worked for IBM for 14 years, and I've worked in data power level support for 4.5 years.
Thank you, Carol. Next, we have Trey Williamson, a Data Power L2 software engineer. Please go ahead, Trey.
Hello, folks. My name's, like you heard, Trey Williamson. I've been working in data power support for going on, I guess, a little over 6 years now. Prior experience to that involves IBM's TCP load balancer and WebSphere application server. Thanks.
Thank you, Trey. Then we have Daniel Dickerson, a Data Power L2 software engineer. Please go ahead, Daniel.
Hi, thank you, David. Good day, everyone. My name is Daniel Dickerson, software engineer with the Data Power support team. Been with the team since 2009, and previously worked with the WebSphere application server level 2 support team since 2006. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Chen Sahu, a Data Power level 2 software engineer. Please go ahead, Chen.
Oh, hi, my name is Chen Sahu, and I work with the data power support team for the last 5+ years. And prior to that, I was working with the system house, you know, integration. And I also work with the integration issues with the data power regarding MQ, JMS, and WSSI.
Thank you, Chen. And finally, we have Paul Magani, a data power level 2 software engineer. Please go ahead, Paul.
Thank you, David. Good day, everyone. My name is Paul Magani. I'm a Data Power L2 software engineer. I've been with IBM 23 years. I've been working with Data Power Level 2 support for 4.5 years, specializing in FTP and ODBC technologies on the appliance.
Thank you, Paul. Before we get to the question and answer period, our panel would like to give you a technical overview of the topic. Moving on to slide four, please go ahead, Paul.
Yes, thank you, David. Good morning again, everyone. Data power indeed has quite a breadth of technologies. In this session, we're going to touch upon SQL ODBC, networking with respect to data power, and MQ series. More specifically, we have put together 5 questions to prime the session. Those questions are, number one, what are the keys in troubleshooting data power ODBC issues? Number two, what are the best ways for me to get information about data power configuration and troubleshooting? Number three, how does IP routing work on the data power service-oriented architecture appliance? Number four, what methods are available for routing MQ traffic and data power? And then number five is, what is the difference in implementation between the new default standby control in 402 versus the MAC takeover implementation, and what does this mean for the network? There was also a sent-in question for this session. Really, it is a two-part question, and that question is as follows. What is the CLI command to turn on or turn off a load balancer health check, and is there a full CLI command reference documentation for XI50-3826 firmware? Okay, let's move to the first question, slide number five. Okay, what are the keys in troubleshooting data power ODBC issues? And if we can please move to slide number six. Okay, folks, I've broken this question into some sections, which are described as data source connectivity issues, SQL ODBC processing policy issues, just some quick notes on SQL endpoint fundamentals, must gather documentations, and if you've exhausted your troubleshooting resources, what do you do next? So I'm going to talk about the first three, and then we can advance the slides and touch on the last two sections. For SQL data source object connectivity issues, we can even further break this into doing some preliminary checks, using some troubleshooting tools, seeing if we have multiple instances of a database running on the same server, and login failures. So with connectivity issues, some preliminary checks we can do, ensuring that the appliance has an ODBC license and the ODBC library via the show license and show library commands from the CLI. Also, if SQL data source object is not connecting to the database server, we want to ensure firewall rules aren't contributing to this. For example, authentication requirements, only allowed certain IP addresses and open ports. We can also confirm connectivity can be established from another device on the same network subnet to the database server. The database server is listening on a configured port and ensure the correct user credentials are being used. Also, we want to ensure the domain in which the data source object is being created is enabled. We want to ensure that the database server has been configured to allow remote access and no access control restrictions are on the device hosting the database. I really should say the machine hosting the database. Some troubleshooting tools. This would involve basically just doing pings and TCP connection tests from the data power appliance to the database server IP. I also wanted to touch on multiple database instances running on the same server. So you want to know what instances the data source object is trying to connect to. You want to configure multiple instances to list on different ports and allow user credentials to access the correct instances installed. And then logon failures, this could be as simple as trying to connect to the database server from another client. The database object, the data source object is in essence acting as a client. If we go to that second bullet, SQL ODBC processing issues and its troubleshooting, a good example here would be out of memory. For example, maybe request messages are too large, which can be mitigated by the XML manager. Perhaps response messages are too large, which can be mitigated by the SQL data source object itself. Then there may be an issue with the client load, which is too heavy and which perhaps can be mitigated by an SLM policy, service level monitoring policy. Just to touch upon some of the SQL ODBC fundamentals, what we can state is that the SQL data source object maintains a dynamic pool of connections to the database, and connections are created as needed up to the limit specified on the data source object. Connections are periodically cleaned up if unused for a given amount of time, and the connection creation cleanup activities are transparent to the user and should not cause serious interruption. Okay, David, why don't we just move on to slide number 7? All I wanted to say here, folks, is that in some cases, when the above troubleshooting mechanisms, the troubleshooting mechanisms on the previous slide are not yielding the desired result, it may be time to contact support. These next slides just really talk about URLs that you can go to for getting support, the must-gather documentation that we will need for diagnosis. Many times we will work in unison with our engineering team, and there are times where we may need to provide a diagnostic build to gather further information for troubleshooting. Okay, David, I think we can just go to the next slide. There's a must-gather document for 3.8.1, and that previous slide had the URL. For older versions of the firmware, there's a must-gather tech note that is here on slide 8. And then just to continue on this slide, we may need data from data power, from the database server, or from the network to get a complete picture of why the SQL data source object perhaps is causing an issue. And packet captures are often needed. Okay, David, I think we can go to the next slide, please. Yes, okay. And this is just basically kind of reiterating what I just said. When it is time to contact support and the troubleshooting methods on the previous slides don't give us a clear result, we have the ability to collaborate with our Level 3 engineering team in helping diagnose these issues. Okay, David, can we please go to the next slide? Okay, at this time, I'd like to turn the question number two over to my colleague, Carol Miller.
Thank you, Paul. I decided to address the question of what are the best ways to get information about data power configuration and troubleshooting. Can I have slide 11, please? There's extensive data power documentation that's contained in an info center. And since the links to it aren't always parallel, I thought it made sense to give you the exact links for the info centers for the various firmware branches. I find that the easiest way to locate a specific topic in an info center is to do a search rather than to page through the various documents as if they were a book. But once I find one relevant page, I may want the context of the document that it's contained in so that I can see, you know, previous and subsequent pages and find out where I am. To find that, there's an icon in the upper right of the info center that has yellow arrows pointing to a blue list. That will show you your current page in the table of contents and can orient you quickly to where you are, and you can get the surrounding information. So I've found that useful, and I hope you will too. Can I have slide 12, please? The other uses of the Info Center besides just the documentation on the Center tab, there is a Learning tab on the left where you can search for data power red books and red papers, and those can give you background, especially if you're a new user or if you're doing a new task. There's also a community and support tab that links to the data power user forum, and that's can be a very useful way to ask a question about something that's puzzling you. Either someone from data power or another user can often answer your question. For troubleshooting, beyond just the issues that you can find in the documentation, tech notes are a great place to look. And our tech notes describe workarounds, fixes, special configurations, and so on, as well as the must-gather data that Level 2 needs for problem solving. If you see a warning or an error, you can search tech notes for that text string, and I have a link there to the general tech note search page. We've also found that you can use Google and search for warnings and errors and log messages, and a lot of the data power documentation has been searched before by other Google users, so that turns out to be a pretty effective way to navigate around our various information products. That's it for me. And if we can have slide 13, I want to hand off, I believe, to Daniel.
That's actually me, Carol.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Hand off to Trey. Thank you.
Hey, folks. So I want to preface before I start on question three with the goal of this question and this issue is completely from the perspective of connectivity from the device to some content provider, some back end, from data power to LDAP, data power to application servers. That's the flow I isolated. So please, if you are detail oriented with network topologies and connectivity, please understand that I based it on that simple flow. So, how does IP routing work on the data power SOA appliance? how will the device handle multiple equal routes? Why would this concern you? Have you experienced intermittent connection failures, DNS lookup issues, or bind failures? Do you use more than one network interface on the appliance? Those are your big questions you have to ask yourself. Next slide, please. A very simple flow that I tried to display here was, if you are on an appliance that has multiple interfaces connected, the routing table is global to the device. It does not matter whether you use a multi-protocol gateway in domain A or a web service proxy in domain B, C, and D. The routing table is your method of choice when you are connecting from that web service proxy out to some back end. The routing table on the device is read or used from the bottom to top. Most specific route first at the bottom to least specific catch-all routes at the top. If you want to connect to the destination of, let's say, 10.10.10.23, for example, let's say that's your back-end server that Data Power needs to connect to. If I use this routing table, I'm going to connect over ETH20, quite simply because there is a static route that has been added. You'll see at the very bottom of that routing table, under the destination column, there's a static route that is, the destination is quite simply labeled 10.10.10.23 with a 32-bit net mask. The interface that it flows over, unfortunately, it doesn't line up, but it's ETH20. We are going to use ETH20 to connect to that destination. If you wanted to connect to a different destination, say 7.8.9.10, that's original, I know, then you would have a random chance because, again, the destination 7.8.9.10, that IP address, is nowhere in that destination column. If we start looking at the bottom, working our way up, we're not going to find a specific subnet route, so we are going to fall on the two default routes. So you would have a completely random chance of using either ETH20 or Management 0 because of the catch-alls. The 0.0.0/0, the catch-all or default route destinations would have equal viable weight to handle and forward that connection. The question is, comparing those two routes, you'll notice the Management 0 interface uses a gateway of 10.2.2.1, and ETH20 uses a gateway of 10.10.10.1. The question we have to ask ourselves is, which of those gateways can actually reach the 7, 8, 9, 10 destination IP address? So, if you want to connect to a destination server, let's say, of 10.2.2.123, if we start looking at our routing table once more, working our way from the bottom up, you'll notice there's a 10.2.2.0/24 destination route. So we would use Management 0 to try to connect to the .123 server. Again, there's going to be questions at the end of this, so next slide, please. I hope there's a lot of questions. I did list one simple tech note as far as routing. This is something that we wrote up and published a while back. I would definitely say to go to this tech note, and again, you don't have to remember how this flow works. Just remember, check out the tech note, see if you have any questions. And if all else fails, feel free to ask support, and we'll be glad to help you. I believe that's the end of my slide. Next one, please. All right. I think we're going to hand off to Chen. Thank you.
Thank you, Trey. And can you please go to slide number 17? We are talking about the different methods available for MQ routing in Data Power. As you all know, that we have the MQ static route, you know, the static URL, which will be prefixed as the DPMQ prefix. Then we have the dynamic MQ URL, which will use the MQ prefix. Then there are other type, you know, the distribution list with the local queue manager and with also remote queue manager. And then you can use the MQOD structure to dynamically route the MQ messages from the device to your backend or to the front. Then there will be also a need if you want to use multiple nodes, you know, multiple URL It can either be MQ URL or HTTP URL. You can use a node set defining those URL and then use that to route the message to different destinations. And lastly, also, we have the feature called transactionality, and you can use this transactionality feature using any of these MQ URL. Slide 18, please. These are some of the examples that I have provided here, how the DPMQ and MQ and other type of methods are using the routing path. So in the DPMQ, you have to provide a MQQM object, which we am calling that as DP1. That is the name of the object configured in the device. And then you will define your request queue, and with the queue that you are going to put the message. That is without the transactional feature to be used. The second example where we have added the transactional equal to true, that means that the message will be guaranteed delivery to the backend queue. There is also some other requirement in the MQQM object where the units of work has to be one, and with its associated automatic backout option to be on. So that is the feature which is available in the MQQM object, and then in the backend you will use this particular URL with transactional equal to true. There is also some example of the dynamic MQ URL where you will use the MQ prefix with the IP address, port number, channel, queue manager name, username, etc. And that will also allow you to create a dynamic connection from the device to the queue manager based on the definition of the, IP, the host name, port, and channel name, and the queue manager name, etc. So that particular MQ prefix will not require any configuration in the device. Rather, it will use as a backend URL, which will send the message, and the connection will be created dynamically in the queue manager side. And once the cache timeout, the channel limit, the channel timeout is expired, the connection will be closed. Now, then we have the distribution list where we have one particular message going to multiple queues in the same queue manager. Now, if you notice this, that we have to use a MQOD request header with multiple destination definition, and that is where we are using the MQ object record name and providing the object name and the queue name. These are some of the structure that you define it, and then once you create that, you serialize it, and then you will inject the MQOD before to sending the message either in the request flow or in the response flow. So slide number 19, please. And this is also another way that if you have a need to say route the message to different remote queue managers, so you can send by using this particular structure, and you have to add the object queue manager name along with the object name. And you can see that I have given some example here. You have three different queue manager. They are using different queues, and that's what the message will go to the local queue which you have configured, and then the local queue will route, the local queue manager will route these messages to the respective queue and the queue manager. So again, this MQOD structure has to be defined, serialized, and injected before you send the message to your request flow or response flow. Slide number 20, please. Here that I'm talking about a MQOD structure, and MQOD structure defines the object name, which means the queue name and the queue manager name. And once you define that, you can also inject, serialize it and then inject it in your request or response flow. But the difference between the distribution list and the MQRD, which is probably a dynamic way of sending a message to any queue to the backend queue manager, that is that it only creates a single connection, and when the message is done, it put the message and closes the connection. So the penalty here is that it will not keep that connection for every request that you're sending. So rather it will be creating the connection, put the message and close it. So that is one of the penalties that you'll find if you are using this method. But there is some need for business, then you'll use this, and that is probably one way that you can route it dynamically. Now, if it is a cluster environment, then you don't have to use the queue manager name. You can only specify the object name, which is the queue name, and the cluster will resolve the queue manager name based on its repository configuration. Next slide, please. Slide number 21. I think I'll just hand over the for question number 5 to Daniel.
Hi. Thank you, Chen. So in 402 firmware, there's a new standby control implementation made available. This new implementation replaces the previous implementation as a default. So I wanted to answer the commonly asked question, what is the difference between the new default and the previous MAC takeover implementation, and what does each method mean for the network? We can move to the next slide. Using firmware prior to 402 release, there is only one implementation available for standby control. This is what we will refer to as the MAC takeover implementation. With the MAC takeover method, a failover or takeover is performed by moving a virtual MAC address from the configured standby control interface from one appliance to another. This requires the network to have rapid spanning tree enabled and deployed properly. If it's deployed properly, it should allow a quick enough response or quick enough spanning tree convergence. So the network is properly informed when the interface, which interface owns the virtual MAC address associated with the virtual IP address. In the 402 firmware, the default implementation changes to use gratuitous ARP as the signaling method. The signaling method to the network of who owns the virtual IP address. For reference, the gratuitous ARP implementation adheres to RFC 826. In this scenario, the virtual IP address is just added as a secondary IP address on the standby control interface when active. Then a gratuitous ARP is sent out announcing the ownership to the network. In the new implementation, rapid spanning tree is not required, and the failover is typically much faster. However, the new implementation requires that all stations on the LAN, including the router, must permit and honor gratuitous ARP. Move to next slide, slide 23, please. 402 firmware and later, both methods are available for usage, and the configuration toggle can be found in the network settings as MAC takeover, as you can see in the slides, an example in the web GUI. As mentioned on the 402 firmware and later, the default is to have MAC takeover disabled, which means the gratuitous ARP method is enabled. If you want to revert to the virtual MAC takeover implementation, just use that toggle. In summary, the key implications for the network for standby control regarding available methods. For MAC takeover, the network must enable rapid spanning tree and make sure that it's deployed for quick enough convergence time. This can require some tuning and testing, and we have found it to be somewhat more difficult to change a network to adhere to this, and therefore we now allow the second method, the gratuitous ARP, or no MAC takeover method, which the network doesn't need rapid spanning tree, but the network does need to have ARP enabled. Next slide, slide 24, please. There were a few additional questions that came up, so I can address those now as well. What is the CLI command to turn on and off a load balancer health check? And is there a full CLI command reference documentation for XI-53826? We can move to next slide, slide 25, please. To answer the first question, the health check can be manually turned on and off via the CLI by going into the load balancer group objects and then modifying the health check configuration setting to on or off, then exit the load balancer group object configuration mode. An example of that actual CLI session in the slide, as you can see, into the group object, and then you can see there's a syntax for the actual health check turn on and off. The usage is basically health dash check, and then the admin state, and then the rest of the options for that particular setting. Go on to slide 26, please. For the final question about the CLI command reference, you can find the full CLI command reference in the product documentation found in the IBM Information Centers. Carol actually referred to these before, too, but I included some links. There's a general CLI command reference link. I actually have a link for the specific load balancer group configuration in CLI, and then actually how to the syntax for the health check setting as well. If you don't have access to these links, you can actually just go to the www.ibm.com/support and then hit the documentation link, and then you'll find all the IBM information centers, including Data Powers. Thank you. Now, I guess I'll turn this back over to David.
Yes, thank you to our panel of experts for answering their pre-submitted questions. At this point, Marcella, we would like to open the lines for a live question and answer period.
Sir, so far we've not had anyone queue up on the audio lines.
Okay, thank you. We do have a couple of questions in the group chat. The first one is, can an MQ message be sent to the back end via the dynamic MQ URL using an SSL proxy profile?
Yeah, I'll take that question. I think the dynamic MQL works with the KDB method. You know, that we have the SSL channel is configured by using two ways. One is using the KDB database or key database. The other one is the SSL proxy profile. So for dynamic MQ URL, the only way it will work that the KDB has to be specified, and there is some other headers called channel definition headers, and the MQSCO is called some kind of security option. Those two things has to be defined in a style sheet, and with that style sheet, then you will be able to use the SSL channel by the dynamic MQ URL. I'm not sure if the SSL proxy method will work because it has not been tested. The only method that I know that it will work, if you use the KDB method, and we can provide you the necessary steps how you can use the style sheet of injecting the KDB definition as well as the security option definition, means the cipher string, etc., that we can provide you. But the SSL proxy profile method is not tested yet. I don't think it will work.
Thank you, Chin. The second question is, where can I find details of transforming a RESTful request to SOAP request?
Okay, the XML firewall is not going to be deprecated, but it is not going to be enhanced. So that's why I think all the functionality that you are trying to do with XML firewall, you can do the same thing using multi-protocol gateway. So, you know, if you are trying to implement new things or new features, those things are not going to be available, and there are, you know, no bug fixes or anything for the XML firewall. So we would encourage you to use multi-protocol gateway instead of the XML firewall service.
I might build on top of Chin's response, his answer as well, and say that if you do run into any configuration options that are missing or that are not possible using the multi-protocol gateway compared to using an XML firewall, it may be a good idea to let support know. But historically speaking, most of our clients that move off of the XML firewall onto the multi-protocol gateway do so because the multi-protocol gateway is much more flexible, provides the same functionality, and has no performance impact.
Okay, thank you. The question that was asked, that was in there as well, but the question that I was referring to is in the group chat. Where do I find details of transforming a RESTful request to SOAP request?
I don't know that we have any. I don't see that question for some reason, but unless some of the other panel members on here know, I don't believe that we have that. I don't believe that we have that.
It was sent to just the Q&A group instead of all in the group chat.
I don't believe that we have an answer on that.
I think there are some developers' work article that has some kind of description how the RESTful service works in DataPower. And, you know, if you can give us the, your email, we can provide you that link for those developers' article.
I would like to point out that on an upcoming slide, there is an email address that is monitored that you can send your any questions to, and I will make sure it gets forwarded to this team.
I think there was a question regarding the performance impact on using dynamic MQRL. I would like to answer that. Yes, there is a performance impact by using MQURL because MQURL doesn't manage the connections effectively as opposed to the static MQURL. So if there is a need for you to use MQURL, you know, you can use it, but it will not be very effective because the connection pooling are not managed by the device. Even though you have a channel timeout, but still they will not be using the pool resource.
Okay, thank you. There's another question in the group chat. Is there any plan to integrate DataPower and ClearCase or any version control software?
I'll try to take this question unless someone else wants to jump in. Bear in mind right now that the panel on this call is primarily Level 2 support folks. The majority of the management type, I believe when you're referring to the ClearCase, we're referring to management type solutions. And the only thing that we tend to run into is the WAMC solution. So I don't believe that we can answer if ClearCase is planned to be integrated. That'd be a question we could try to find an answer for you to, though.
Okay, thanks. There was also a question that was sent only to me, and the question is, with multiple interfaces, how do you ensure that the any session always uses the same interface / IP address? Failure to do so creates problems with stateful firewalls.
Yeah, absolutely correct. And much like I had on that slide, one of the simplest solutions is if the destination that we're trying to connect to, if there is no dedicated subnet route, then the simplest solution and the most common one is the static routes to prevent that to prevent that randomness of which interface is used. That's a very good question, and it's one quite simply that we've run into quite often because, just like you said, you know, firewalls, routers, they tend to prefer the connection to flow through the same interface. Or you only allow certain connections to flow through specific network paths. So the simple answer is a static route is the easy way to fix it. A more appropriate way may be to clean up your network configuration a bit to try to limit the possibility of which interface is used. That tech note may help some, but if that tech note does not help enough, you're always welcome to open up a PMR, and we'll take a look at the configuration and at the problem and see if we can help you find a better answer. I hope that helps answer your question.
Thank you. We have another question. How to trace what data we are sending while calling stored process probe is not showing the data. He also went on to say probe just shows as question marks in signature.
Yeah, I think that was a story. He meant calling a stored procedure. On the SQL data source object, there is a configuration tab where you can, I think it's a trace or a debug. I have to verify, but that might be your vehicle for tracing that data. I would like to get back to the individual who asked this question, David, and give him a more definitive, detailed answer.
Okay, and again, I'll be mentioning this on one of the upcoming slides. There is an email address, wsehelp@us.ibm.com, where you can mail your questions in, and that way the panel can acquire your email address.
That'd be great.
We also have another question. For DataPower XB60 B2B gateway service, is there a way to send a functional acknowledgement from an MDN to back-end systems?
Yeah, let me take that question. I think for the AS2 protocol, the MDN is terminated at the gateway service, the B2B gateway service. If you would like to send that acknowledgement to the backend, you have to do some kind of processing in your response flow. So you have to get the MDN, inject to a particular header, and then send it to the backend or the front, I mean the client, through that header, because this MDN is terminated at the gateway service. It doesn't do automatically.
Okay, thank you. There is another question from Rajeshwar, and I'm not sure I understand it. Could someone on the panel have a look? It's near the end of the group chat.
I think it says paginated service means like a page, you know, paging the, so sending a page like a text message. Is that the question?
Yes.
Maybe Trey, can you take that? You know, we have the error report. It can send an error report, but possibly the page part, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think I need more information or need the clarification on that question. I hate to say that, but I'm trying to understand it.
If I'm reading it correctly, it seems to ask if you can pull maybe 10 out of 100 records and then make an aggregated response to a consumer. Depending on the protocol or what exactly it's referring to, yeah, I mean, services can commonly call 10 different, you know, back-end services or requests and aggregate them using a, you know, XSL transformation or something to that effect to make a, you know, aggregated response to a consumer. So that's something that we see, you know, used quite often. If I'm reading that correctly, I think the answer to that is yes.
Okay, thank you. I don't believe we have any more questions coming in the group chat. Marcella, can you poll again for any questions on the phone?
Sir, we have no one in queue.
Okay. Thank you, Marcella. And I want to thank everyone for participating in the live Q&A period. And finally, don't forget to connect with us. You can be notified about upcoming webcasts related to the product and topics discussed today by subscribing to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange mailing list. Simply send an email to wsehelp@us.ibm.com with the subject of WSTE Subscribe, and you'll receive a list of mailing lists that you can subscribe to. Also, if there's a topic that you'd like to see scheduled, or if you have any comments or questions that would help us improve our future webcasts, please feel free to let us know at that same email. You could also connect with us through our Facebook page and our Twitter account. Please talk to us and let us know how we can make this program even better. We do welcome any ideas that you may have. At this time, I would like to advance to slide 29 and pass the presentation to Paul for a summary of today's session. Go ahead, Paul.
Yes, thank you, David. Folks, I know we had quite a bit of detail here, and you've been armed with quite a bit of information. Feel free, please, to email us at wsehelp@us.ibm.com if you have some further questions. And, David, can we go to the next slide? I think on the next slide we have additional URLs for everyone's reference. Slide 30. There are useful URLs there that you guys can go to for reference. And I'll pass it back to you, David.
Thank you, Paul, for a great summary. And finally, there we have a slide with some additional WebSphere product resources. At this time, we will conclude the Ask the Expert session. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation, and we hope you will join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. Thanks very much for joining us today, and a sincere thank you to our panel of experts for presenting today.